All right, so I'm gonna see if I can try to do this without waking up the whole goddamn neighborhood. Let's see if I can do this. Hiding. So I can't really do it. I can't. Hold on. Let me get a. And I really can't do it. You really can't do it. I mean, baby boy's asleep upstairs. If I try to go any louder, he's gonna wake up.
Brother, I'm in my basement. I turned off my furnace. Like, dad life is, it's different nowadays, man. We do what
It's
we can.
different. It's different. You can't go live. I mean, you can't go full ham on a Tuesday or Wednesday or Saturday night. I mean, who knows when we're recording this? Nobody's the wiser, you know?
Who knows, man? We're just floating around the universe here.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. What is Dune? Where is Dune? And why Gamora? You know? I think Dune might have saved the movie theaters, much like Tom Cruise did like a year or two ago.
Yeah, I heard almost 100 mil in the first weekend, something like
Almost
that.
100 mil. So, and it's and 90 holding steady at 97, holding steady, stay on target, stay on target. She's breaking up. 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I think we're looking good.
Man, I'm saying this as like a fanatic for Lynch's Dune. I would go, to the lengths, whatever it took to convince someone what a good movie that was, and I have strong arguments for it. So
And that's the show, kids. Thanks for coming out. Welcome.
You are a barbarian.
Every town has an Elm Street.
You know, when family and friends get together, there can also be a lot of drinking and drugging, and that's why it's so important to pick your friends, the party you party, you know what I'm saying.
Meow.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Ghosts and goblins.
Yeah, used to be shithouse.
It's a good change.
Got to catch the red eye.
Welcome to Comic Con's podcast, the geek podcast for the rest of us. Who are the motherfucking rest of us? My name is Nick Stevens. I am your host, but where aren't we all trying to get back to Arrakis? Joining me on the ZMM Box 350 is a new voice to the cast, a voice that hasn't been heard, a friend, a new friend, perhaps a neighborly friend. Welcome to the show, Comic Conzies, Mr. Evan. That's right. I'm not giving you his last name. I'm not giving you his government name. And there's no aliases either. You know what I'm saying?
But it's just taking after Zendaya, man. Just trying to, live as a daily. Yeah, thanks for having me, brother. This is so
Hey,
cool,
of
man.
course, man. Of course. Thanks for doing this, man. Thanks for, we're proud papas alike. We got to keep it down to a dull roar on a weeknight, on a school night, really any night of the week. But
Yeah,
I'm just glad
unlike
you
the
could do it.
IMAX that we were at. My God, man.
Let's talk about it. So you and I saw this movie together, and I thought it would be fitting, even though it's been a few days since we saw it. We saw this thing together in the IMAX. God damn. I mean, I've seen some movies in an IMAX before, but this movie fucking rocked me.
I couldn't believe how good it was, man. I haven't been, I don't know. I don't think I've been to a movie since before the pandemic. I haven't been to an
Oh, okay.
IMAX since I can remember. So this was
Wow.
just like, coming into this one in an IMAX, like, what's next? What's
Right.
the biopic coming up in on IMAX? I'll be there, whatever it
Right.
is, They hooked me.
Dude, I think I've seen a few on the IMAX, and sometimes it holds up, sometimes it doesn't. I saw Oppenheimer on IMAX. I wish I'd seen Inception on IMAX, but or even Dark Knight, but I didn't. Because I think when they were doing those, it was like limited, and I think more theaters now have that IMAX screen. But just the sound, man, like for me, and this is any movie, and I'm gonna talk about Green Lantern for a sec. When I went to go see Green Lantern, I was so stoked. I was like, here we go, Hal Jordan, DC. He's flying around. Don't worry, kids. We're going to get to Dune in a second. This all relates. And when I got in the theater, the movie starts, and we meet what was it? Hepatitis, not hepatitis, Polaris, whatever the fuck is it? Parallax. Okay, there you go. Almost an STD.
I got you. I got you.
You meet Parallax, and the theater's like a dull, like, what the fuck? I can't. I can't get excited. Like, if you're going to take me away, I need to be immersed. And this movie, I was immersed.
I said the same thing, man. And this, like, for something to eclipse my favorite Dune movie experience, it's an impressive feat, man. I was in my mid-20s. My buddy invited me over to his uncle. He was a house sitting for his uncle for the week. He's like, come over, man. I'm getting a keg. You know, we'll just hang out. I'm like, hell yeah. So I brought Dune. And I showed up and I said, we're going to watch Dune right now. And when we're done, we're going to watch it again. We watched Dune for 5 straight days, dude. My buddy would leave for work. We'd be like, dude, you've been gone for like 3.5 Dunes. Get back here, dude.
So hold on. So this was not a joke at the top of the show. You are a strong supporter of the David Lynch.
Indeed. I really am, man.
But to be clear, you also love the books.
Oh, yes. Right. My entry to the Duneverse was not David Lynch's Toto masterpiece. it's so cool, man. I mean, so many things owe, you know, all of their runs to this. I don't think there'd be a Star Wars without Dune. I know there wouldn't be an Avatar, you know, talk about kind of sci-fi Terminator, you know, with the, you know, anti-AI stuff. I really think most of it owes itself to Dune. I'm sure there's, you know, more, you know, that it all goes back to whatever, Lord of the Rings or any of that, man. But, you know, just to, like, to be immersed in this for as long as I have and to come into it with a lot of misgivings about the casting. You know, to me, Chalamet is not my Paul Muad'Dib, you know. Zendaya was a little more excited about. I'll give her a shot. But, you know, the first one I was kind of like, I walked out of like, they did okay. This one completely won me over and I'm never going back, man. I'm a Dune Part 2 head now.
It's a good point that we should talk about, because regardless of where you sit on the fence with the Lynch one, I've watched the Lynch one for the first time ever only a couple years ago. I think actually during the pandemic or shortly thereafter or before, you know, before the dark times, before the empire, you know, that's when I watched it. And I remember being like, and I can watch older movies. And I know the difference between a good movie and a bad movie, even a movie that's like maybe even dated. And while the Lynch one has some dated moments, for the time it came out, visually and what it tried to do, I got it. I got what it was trying to do. But I also never read the books. I didn't know the lore. I think for someone that it was one of those things where it wasn't going to hold your hand. It was just going to jump you into it. And I feel like the Denis Villeneuve movies, while there is a lot of moving parts, I feel like, and I don't even want to say it's hand holding. I almost feel like, and maybe it's just because I love Denis Villeneuve movies.
Oh, who doesn't? So
his cinematography and the way he shoots a movie, I feel like he kind of, maybe he did lull us in a little bit more than that Lynch one. Maybe the Lynch one was a little bit more abrasive. Then again, the Lynch one tried to cram more into one movie versus two.
Well, and I fully own up to being, you know, nostalgia is like the number one reason I love that so much, man. I was, you know, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 years of watching it many times a year. I remember, I don't know how old I was, but I remember when Jessica's voice, release my bonds, started clicking in my head. What else could you tell me to do? You know, touch my boobies, play with your thingy. You know? I like it. I dig it. You know, there was a very early, you know, digging into my psychosexual psyche of, you know, doing it. It's hooks deep in me, man. So, yeah. So I can't believe how much I liked this fucking movie. It was so, so good.
I loved all of this guy's movies going back to like Prisoners, and I love Sicario. I probably watch Sicario like once every year or so. And Arrival was really solid. So I just,
Burning on Annihilation. That was him, right? That was really, right?
No, I think Annihilation was, Garland, Alex Garland.
Oh, my bad. You're right.
Who did the Dread movie? Like the best Dread movie ever.
Like, where's Dread 2? That was amazing.
I know. I was one of those guys that, signed an internet petition to get that sequel made. And like Carl, I was following Carl Urban on social media. He's like, all right, guys, we got about 150,000 signatures. We're going to march on January 6th. Wait a minute. And nothing came to fruition. But dude, I mean, the vision on this movie, and like, even for someone like myself who's not been immersed, I've read enough online now to kind of get the idea, and I've had some extensive conversation with you about the lore, but maybe break down for the average kiddo, for the average listener, right? A clip notes, if you will, of what we're talking about here with Dune. Like, least for these two movies, or rather, I mean, it's one long movie, right? For all intents and purposes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I will say about Villeneuve, he made the right choices. He added the right stuff. He deleted the right stuff. But the Dune-diverse as it stands, man, stop me if I'm Dune-splaining. it takes place in our timeline, which I've always, you know, I really liked. So it's 10, you see the year pop up 10,000 or something. It's actually like 25,000 years into the future. They only start counting when the guild comes around and then space travel takes place, which you see reflected in Warhammer and, you know, all these other, you know, major, you know, sci-fi properties. Warhammer is a complete ripoff of Dune. But anyway, you know, this galaxy spanning empire is run by the Padishah Emperor, who could not be happier that was our boy Christopher Walken. You've got an excellent Walken impression. I do not. it's the internecine fights between the houses of the Lansrod. The Harkonnens came in, they ran the shit, they controlled the spice, which controls the universe. If anybody hasn't seen the movie, I don't know what the hell you're doing here, but you know, you get the gist of it. But what Herbert was doing with the whole story was telling the far future history of where religion might take us, where politics will lead us, what the dangers of a charismatic leader are. Mm-hmm. His politics are weird. They're kind of all over the place, but he has a fun quote. It's something like, our worst president was Kennedy because he had us saying, yes, sir, Mr. Charismatic Leader, what could we do? And our best president was Nixon because he showed us what power is capable of. And I think you kind of see that reflected in some of what he tries to get across in Dune, while having badass, you know, action scenes and amazing mile long sandworms, you know, I'm still impressed to this day with the way he can tie all of that stuff together and kind of not only, you know, talk about far future religion, politics, you know, political intrigue, but put it through the lens of ecology. Like, it's all about, you know, what's happening on this one planet and how that affects all of this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I could talk about it for days, but my understanding of it is that.
It's pretty fascinating, man, because the parallels to, like, you know, socioeconomic and cultural wars that we could look at, like, Iraq and, like, oil and stuff like that and think about the spice, and we have to control the spice for interdimensional travel. And then you have these warring houses, you know, these Harkonnens House Atreides. And they've been battling for like centuries, and that sounds way too familiar. If you just fucking turn on the news or just Google shit, like, you know, I don't even want to get into all that. Like, but that rings true. And that's almost like you take something like that and then you just throw in some sandworms. I hate them. Right. You know what I'm saying? I've been to Saturn. If only we got genuine Beetlejuice sandworms in this movie, I swear to God. Do you think they would have been pissed about that?
The multiverse has it, man. Well, you know, if we find a way, we can find it.
But even just like the Fremen, you know, like, I don't know about you, but the Fremen being like the natives of Arrakis, you know, I mean, whether it's, you know, Native Americans and Dances with Wolves or Ewoks on Endor, you know what I'm saying? Like, you always want to side with the indigenous people. Like, well, hold on. Absolutely. Hang on. They were here first. This is their place. This is their culture. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Maybe both you guys should get the fuck out of here, you know?
Yeah. And you know, you don't really see it with, you know, with Paul. Like, he's a reluctant leader, but you don't really see, like, you know, the negative aspects that Frank Herbert was really warning us about with, like, the charismatic leader thing. That all comes later, you know, the first two, three books are all just set up, but it's everybody's favorite part of the story. You know, because you get to see all the pieces kind of fall into place, and it gets so weird in the later books. Like, it's really hard to follow this. This was, you know, mostly considered to be unfilmable before Lynch started it, and by a lot of people after he completed his as well. Right. I don't think he had a director credit on it. Like, he kind of distanced himself from it.
And I think, did Ridley Scott have something to do with the first Dune, or was he going to do the first Dune?
I feel like that sounds right to me. Yeah. It got passed around a few times. Jodorowsky, of course, was trying to get one. If you've ever seen any artwork from that, there's a good documentary on Jodorowsky's Dune. I think it's, you know, it's captured people's imaginations for a long, long time, and, and for good reason. You know, the best sci-fi kind of reflects, you know, the extremes of humanity in a badass, interesting setting. You know, I don't think, I don't think nobody wants to sit down and have a lecture about, you know, the dangers of a charismatic leader. But when you see Paul Muad'Dib go on his journey and, you know, wear a still suit that processes his feces in the catch pads, the thighs, and, you know, all the shit, it's awesome. You know, you get immersed in the lore and the kind of the message kind of gets buried underneath of it.
Well, it's great seeing, like, you know, people fall at their own hubris. You know what I'm saying? It's always kind of an alluring thing. I mean, I always reference Breaking Bad on this show because it's like, how much can somebody's one person's arrogance and hubris, like, completely defeat them? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I haven't just seeing like the visions that Paul has in this movie, like you see him, he wants to try to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to try to do the right thing and maybe stray away from what his father had set out to do. But at the same time, he's still partly his father, and he's still now this new chosen one, so to speak, and he has to fill that role. So it's like these two like conflicting paths that he has to take, you know? And yeah. I haven't even read the books, but like I'm hoping that by the end of this movie, whether it was his romance for Zendaya or Shani, is it Johnny or Chani?
Chani. Yeah.
Whether it's Chani or his love for Chani or his own desire to do the right thing, I'm hoping we see that turn around in the next installment. Or maybe I'll just have to actually read the books at some point.
Well, I was gonna say, I don't want to spoil too much, but that was another choice that Villeneuve made that I think a lot of, you know, Dune heads probably weren't too happy about, to see that kind of, like, you know, Chani in the books is a good character. Zendaya elevated her. Villeneuve did through, you know, the writing, but she did an amazing job with that. In the books, she was kind of like a ride or die. Like, you know, she just supported him no matter what, and it was appropriate, you know, in the storytelling. For her to kind of have her own run, I mentioned to you, like, I just bought her as a badass this entire, you know, ride of this movie. Sometimes that's hard for me when someone's so recognizable. You see her, like, goofing around in Euphoria, you know, and my brain carries that over into these other roles. She, you know, broke that mold easily for me in this one.
I've seen her in a lot of things, and my wife wanted to watch Euphoria. We watched that, and that was, like, filled with anxiety. It was anxiety riddled with angst, and it's a little tough to watch in some aspects, but it's also very enjoyable to watch in some aspects and on a much more deeper level.
Sydney Sweeney, you know, helped me thinking philosophically.
Well, it's the anyway. Icing. It's the icing on the philosophy there. it's a lot of icing. And if anybody's anybody, and you pay attention to anything, SNL, she was on SNL recently, and it was the most like highest watched, the most watched SNL episode in like in years, and everyone's like losing it on the internet. They're like, I wonder why, you know. And it's like, all right, easy, everybody, easy. I mean, we know why. But seriously, we really know why. But no, I'm not taking anything away from her. Like, honestly, Zendaya, like, she crushed it, man. Like, there's moments in the movie where, I mean, just her performance in terms of her allegiance to her people, you know, and the emotion that went behind that. And then even like the emotion with our boy Josh Brolin when Paul finds him in the desert, you know?
Oh yeah.
Just that line when he's like, I remember your steps, old man, or I can hear your steps, old man.
Yeah.
Like just that,
yeah,
that
the tags callbacks.
They had a callback to that first film. And who doesn't like a little bit of religious lore in a sci-fi movie where, like, is he a chosen one? Is he the chosen one? I mean, we love The Matrix, right?
Yeah.
You know what
Absolutely,
I'm saying?
Absolutely, like, man. Yeah, yeah.
That all into that thing. It bites off. That's another thing that bites off Dune, I guess.
Yeah, we love that messianic stuff, you know, man. Everyone wants to see that play out and, you know, watch the rise and fall. We love that that whole trope. I think we may have buried the lead a little bit because I don't think, while they were amazing, I think my favorite character was probably Stilgar. Like, you know, when you see my man, oh man, I'm blanking on his name. Oh, yeah.
Javier Bardem.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I mean, when you see him and then he's playing, a religious fanatic, you don't think like, you know, levity goofball, like, you know, comedy, injection into the movie. Like I think he brought so much to that role just in and of himself and what he was already bringing in. And, you know, me having just some love for Stilgar and Stilgar being really pretty stoic in the literature. Like, there were some moments of levity, but Man, we were talking about like his little whistles and shit. It was like Michael Winslow showed up in the beginning there when he was kind of
that's
like,
great when they're going through the caverns. Here, we were watching that in the theater, and he's going through the caverns and he does that weird. it was like a desert duck sound, and you
Dave
called out
Coulier's
the Mike,
in there, yeah.
you called out the Michael Winslow. But we also, yeah. I mean, look, first of all, speaking of burying the leads, this movie's getting ready to start. We're all hyped. You hear that, you know, and then right after that, for like about like the quietest part of the movie, just the bag of chips, just one row back. I don't know if it's a bag of chips or a bag of nachos. Somebody had those nachos and they come in like in the bag. I don't know why they don't just dump them in the tray. And yeah, I know it was because I used to work at Regal for many years. So I don't know why. I guess they don't want to touch the chips. So like we don't dump them out. We just put the bag in there, you know?
Oh yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about it. I honestly thought it was like someone snuck in a bag of Doritos with individually wrapped Doritos in it.
It might have been individually wrapped. Like she opens the bag, each Doritos wrapped.
It was like 20 seconds. Like everyone was looking around. Yeah,
it felt like a long. It felt like a red hot minute. You know
what
I'm saying?
That was great.
And I'm turning around like, what the fuck? You know, because you pay a lot of money to see these movies nowadays.
You do.
You know what I'm saying?
You do.
And then you're excited, you know, and it's. Thankfully, the music came back on, and she was able. Why would you wait, too? Like, just wait for the
well,
next.
Yeah.
You know,
there were like 40 minutes of trailers beforehand.
Oh my god, the trailers!
And I gotta say, that was the first time in my life I think I've ever been in a hot theater. I don't know if they did it to set the you know the theme, but yeah, it was,
because we were in a desert the whole time, so they wanted to set.
They might have done
mood.
It on purpose. Yeah,
dude,
yeah,
we were sweating. All of us were sweating.
And I mean, despite you know bitching about all this shit, it's still my favorite movie going experience to date, man. That music rumbled so hard. I was sitting next to Nick. I absolutely ripped a fart, and I did not. it was not me. It was the music. And I was like, dear God, I hope this doesn't smell. I'm just getting to know this guy. He's cool as shit. I'm hoping he calls me on to.
I didn't smell anything. I didn't smell anything. You know, I was too busy trying to take care of my raging heart on because the whole movie was just that amazing. And then
really
the brown notes would hit and they would just tickle the scrotum a little bit. And you'd be like, oh, I felt like I was on Howard Stern, but this time I was straddling the speaker. You know what I'm saying?
Hell
and
yeah.
We all know that scene. So if you don't know, you googs.
That's right. Jenna Jameson, her not so private parts.
Oh my God. Sweet Jesus. She's not dead, right? No, Jesse James passed. Okay. Jenna Jameson's still with us. She's
they
still
do,
with us.
Though, man. What's the average age of a porn star, man?
I don't know. I think it's the coke, you know, and then the plastic surgery probably doesn't help, you know?
Yeah.
That's why you got to stay healthy like us, kids, on Comic Con's podcast. A nice 16-ounce Diet Coke at about 9 o'clock at night, and I'll have no problems falling asleep whatsoever. But seriously, the cast, Rebecca Ferguson, she comes out for a good time. By the way, I noticed I was talking to my wife about this because my wife, you know, she's like, well, maybe I need to see this movie because everybody keeps talking about this fucking movie. And she was like, what's going on with the cast and Timothy Chalamet? You know, the ladies love the Chalamet. The boys love the Zendaya and a little bit of that Florence Pugh on the side, you know. And I said, no, don't sell it short. Rebecca Ferguson shows up for a good time. And I've loved her. I mean, I really only know her from Mission Impossible movies. I know she's been in other stuff before they come after me.
Oh, man.
But she played his mom. And she's our age. And Chalamet is 27. I'm like... Okay, they could have gotten somebody a little bit older. You could have brought up Michelle Pfeiffer from the Quantumania, but you know, God forbid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she was great, man. I know her as Rose the Hat from Dr. Sleep. If you saw that one.
Oh, was that good. Any good? I never saw that.
It was. I liked it a lot, man. A lot of people thought it was pretty hokey. That was another good one that was like, you know, I'm kind of critical of movie adaptations of books. I love when they do it, and I'm always like picking once I see it. They did a great job with that one too. The book is kind of hokey. Stephen King's kind of hokey. I'm a fan, but you know, when you come down to it, like he's, you know.
He's gotten hokier more over the years, right?
So hokey, yeah. Although I gotta say, we started watching Mr. Mercedes on Peacock. That's actually a pretty good one. I read the first. It's a trilogy. I read the first book. That's not as hokey. You got a little like more detective-y.
Is that the Ray Winstone one?
Oh no, it looks just like Ray Winstone. What's the other guy? Brennan Gleeson. They look exactly alike.
Okay, that guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they do have that. They do have that look. Let me just slick back the hair and.
Yeah. Well.
Brendan Gleeson is the guy that Daniel Day-Lewis throws that fucking hatchet in his back.
Yeah,
in Gang of New York.
Yeah.
You're past posting now, Kelly. How? And then he like throws the fucking axe at him or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm combining two movies.
No, that was it. You nailed it.
You know, I don't know. I'm just trying, you know. I could spit you out of my mouth because you're lukewarm. You know what I mean? And he does that fucking. Oh, dude. I'm trying to think of where I also wanted to go with that. Oh, yeah. Bardem. Kind of cool seeing Brolin and Bardem in a movie again, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure it was probably cool for them, like, to have that little No Country for Old Men moment, you know?
They seem like they'd vibe, right? Strong, silent type.
I feel like, I mean, just from stuff I've seen, I feel like they're like the, you know, they probably smoke cigarettes in between takes, you know? They probably listen to the same bands, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're about the same age, you know?
Yeah.
But it was cool seeing that. I definitely would be a Fremen. I don't think I could be a Harkonnen.
Yeah, you didn't get to see enough of the Atreides. I'd probably be Atreides. Although I would probably go more. I would just want to be a Mentat. Put me wherever you want. And the Mentat.
Oh, interesting. Tell the Kamikazes about this because I didn't know this either. The Mentats are the guys that are like connected to the Brainiac thing.
So you only saw one. You saw two of them in the first part one. I don't think
the evil one. The evil one.
Yeah. Died. The evil one got the gas in his face from the Baron. His name was Peter DeVries, very expertly played by one of my favorites, Brad Dourif in the Lynch movie. He's excellent.
Okay.
So he's always great.
Chucky, right? Voice of Chucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Dune has an AI revolt. You know, again, shades of Terminator, all that. They find the spice, and then they realize that they can use it to grow in a bunch of different ways. The navigators take the spice to learn how to open up, you know, space. Anyone can take spice and have elevated health and live longer. The Mentats learn how to train with the spice to become human computers, and they do.
Know any of that.
Yeah, they don't tell you any of this.
They just say the spice enables space travel.
Yeah, and any great house is like they're only as good as their Mentat. And the Atreides had a really good one in Thufir Hawat. You just see him kind of roll his eyes back and his little black thing on his lip. That's at least he did a little nod to that. If he was going to cut the whole Mentat thing, the Mentats are known to drink this. They call it the juice of Safu. And that's what gives them their superpowers. And they have
got to drink a juice at some point.
And then they get Kool-Aid lips. They're known by the stains. And that's what that little black thing on the lip was a thing to. They have Dune. The book is full of these little litanies. You hear the litany of fear a few times. Fear is the mind killer.
Yeah. Fear is the mind killer. Yeah.
Yeah. The Mentats had my favorite, which I believe I could probably recite from memory.
Want to lay it down?
Yeah, man, absolutely.
Lay it down.
So the Mentats would
no pressure
their juice, and they'd say, "It is by the juice of Safu that the thoughts acquire speed, the lips acquire stains, the stains become a warning. It is by will alone I set my mind in motion." And I always loved that, man. It was a cool little like, and you know, me a nerd on the playground, like just trying to make sure I can kick the kickball and not strike out in front of Melanie Collins and be a total, you know, it is by will alone I kick this goddamn ball straight. You know, I would use that to
grow everybody up. Had a Melanie Collins. Everybody had a Melanie Collins.
Well, yeah. She kissed me in kindergarten under the big tree, and then she smacked me. So that set me up for a lifetime.
There you go.
Chasing,
yeah.
You know, what was I going to do after that?
That planted the seed of like, all right, so now I need to chase all women like that.
Yeah. So when women hurt me, that means they love me. All right. Got it. Check. Thanks, Melanie.
Oh, that's brilliant. Isn't that great how the human condition works? You know,
it's
fantastic.
I could talk about Mentats all day, man. That was one thing that I will say Lynch's version definitely has over it. They give you a little bit more of that Mentat love, man. So great characters and a cool kind of, you know, whole explanation of how they do what they do.
But the witches, now these mother superiors. Yeah. And I'm
I think they're the Reverend Mothers.
The Reverend Mothers. Do you think, because the Lynch one, for the folks that aren't initiated maybe, I thought they did a pretty good job of the telepathy speaking. Spoilers. Yeah. By the way, we're all over the place. If you haven't seen this movie, I mean, you've already lost anyway. But do you think, because this is how I feel. I mean, I think the not only the scope and the scale of this was better just because, it's 2024 now and we can do things we couldn't do in the 80s. But also, even without using models, and there was some scenes shot on site and there was some structures of sets. We talked about how Villeneuve like hired a linguist to actually create the language, which is impressive. Yeah. But also, I thought the telepathy scenes and the voice, like the dubbing, the sound editing alone, I thought was better than the Lynch one. Not necessarily better, but just I thought it like I thought it helped convey the telepathy a little bit better. What do you think? You agree, disagree?
Absolutely. They knocked it out of the park with that. Yeah. There's very little ground that I will like try to hold for the Lynch one anymore. The Mentats, they stand. Everything else, he nailed it. The sound, yeah. It's such a cool, and it's so cool to see Paul kind of struggle with it early on in the first part, you know, and kind of come around to it. They call it the weirding ways, you know, is one of the things, but it's just one of the things that the Bene Gesserits kind of train themselves to do. They're absolute badasses, and they're the whole reason that, you know, we kind of have the prophecy thing. They're religious zealots who believe their own hype, but also use it and spread it to their benefit. Like, they planted the seed of the idea of the prophet on Arrakis. They, you know, said that this would happen, and then Jessica and Paul, as you see, kind of use that already being in place to, you know, skirt through and get in with the Fremen and kind of survive.
It's so funny, man. I'm watching like Shogun now, and obviously the Catholics are placed in parts of feudal Japan, and they're Portuguese, and they're kind of spreading their Christianity through feudal Japan. And we all kind of know how that story ends. And if you look back at, like, you know, obviously, you know, the Spanish Inquisition, or you look at the Crusades, or you look at, I don't know, any number of historical wars, like, where religion was inserted and maybe perhaps the instigator. And then I'm watching this movie and I go, these goddamn witches are just fucking starting a holy war all over again. You know what I mean? Like, these fucking, now granted, some things are set in motion. It's other people outside of them that do it, but they're almost like being used as pawns for their own drive of what, because this is what you believe, this is what you've planted, you know. I mean, it almost makes you think sometimes, like, when are we gonna, you know, obviously Frank Herbert was making these references on
when
purpose,
are we gonna learn, man?
Yeah. But when are we gonna learn, man? You know what I mean? Yeah. And then I guess it makes it's really intriguing, because it couldn't just be like Harkonnens and Atreides bad, fire good, you know. It wouldn't, you need something to kind of build up that rising conflict. I get it, but you're watching it, I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah. That's another place they gave Chani a great layer. Like, in the books, she didn't really push back against the you know, fanaticism. They didn't have that push and pull within the Fremen, you know.
Within the Fremen, yeah. Which I liked, very much, by the way, because that's very, like, because let's be real, regardless of when the book was written, let's just say even if he wrote it last week, there's going to be conflict within the ranks of any organization or institution, or, you know, even if it was like the military conflict or an educational philosophical conflict, but especially in that religious conflict, there's got to be, like, within tribes, there has to be internal conflict. And that's why we keep coming back. You know what I'm saying? We keep coming back for those internal conflicts, you know?
Yeah. It just adds so much more depth. Like, you can see that, you know, it's not one dimensional. It's not just you know, it's not just moving the plot along. There's things happening to these characters, and they're chained. Even some of the, you know, side characters, I don't remember Chani's friend's name, but, you know, she was kind of moved, and her kind of, you know, scoffing at the.
Oh, she came around real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all came around real quick. As soon as my man got on that sandworm, and they played that amazing Hans Zimmer music, and it was like, da, blah, and then he's riding it, and you see Chani's face light up. I've never seen any actress light up the way she lit up on that big IMAX screen when she was relieved A, he was alive, but B, oh shit, I think she even started to believe. I felt like Morpheus was going to come out at any minute. They were going to look at the green number scrolling down on the black screen, and any minute Morpheus is going to come out and be like, she's beginning to believe, you know what I mean? Like that's what it gave me that same chill that I had when Neo shook the dust off of him in the subway scene, and
he
just went like that, you know. He just beckoned Mr. Smith to come, you know.
Hell yeah, man. I just kept falling more and more into it, and we talked about one of the, there were so many like little tricks I think that they did really well. Like, it would be a really dark interior, and then all of a sudden, bam, you know, you're out in the really bright sun, and in IMAX it was so bright it took you a second to even orient yourself, well, where are we, you know? But it wasn't like too quickly paced. It was just such a cool way to like make sure you were with it every minute of the run, you know.
No, I love it. I'm with you. It's funny too, because I have on my Zoom background, I have Mr. Chalamet and Miss Zendaya, and I may be sitting in front of Chalamet's picture on purpose.
Can't blame
me. But you have Mr. Austin Butler playing the psycho killer Norman Bates. What's his name again?
Fade Routh. Yeah.
And he's a psychopath.
Yeah, and that's another one, man. no one could have convinced me coming into this that I would like a character more than I liked Sting in Lynch's. He was insane, mm-hmm. just, you know, down to his like weird.
Definitely some like, interesting choices.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. You know, not an ounce of body fat and just like in this weird little, you know, kind of, I don't know, plastic diaper thing. Rocked it. Loved it.
Right.
You know, every minute of it was just so strange and indulgent. And this was a much more kind of like contemplative, you know, much more like animalistic, you know,
all animalistic.
Yeah. The Harkonnens had a much different vibe. If anybody's seen the Lynch one, you know, it was more kind of like a body horror kind of, you know, Cronenberg thing. Pus, and they had a little, like their drink was literally like a little mouse that they
squirted. Yeah. And they had that worm, that space worm phallic thing that was all oozy and pussy or something like that.
Drinking cat milk and milking cats and shit. Yeah, just yeah, weird. Yeah. You know, yeah, Lynch yeah. really went far with that. But it was the Harkonnen vibe was, you know, I don't know. It was more contemplative, which makes sense to me in a kind of a far future sense. I think we probably get sick of, squishing rats and milking cats or whatever they were doing. You know, they're a little bit more like along the lines of what, you know, I don't know, a royal house you would think they would be, but still sadistic and disgusting. And, you know, you could see when he was stabbing those handmaids, he was just kind of like,
oh, just arbitrarily, just
a Tuesday, man.
Just slicing a neck on a Tuesday. But for me, it was Tuesday. Raul Julia, rest in peace, Street Fighter. If you don't know, you gooks. But seriously,
you gotta know.
This always backs up my theory. Could we just listen? Maybe these Harkonnens would just lighten up a little if we could just turn some fucking lights on. Okay, could we get? Could we bring in some? I don't know, some fresh fruit in here because this guy hasn't had any vitamin D. Can we just? You know, I mean, they're pretty much like they would meet the Borg and they'd all have a good time.
Seasonal affective disorder on a galactic scale.
You know what I'm saying?
You like, think he has a little sunlight.
But even the House Atreides, I'm not going to lie, even though they got the ocean on their home world or wherever they were, it was still gloomy and gray.
It was,
And their home base was kind of dark. So for once, it was one of those situations where, like, actually, both houses look like they need a little bit of home decor to kind of lighten the mood a little bit, guys.
Yeah, where's Far Future Joanna Gaines, man? Get a little pop of color, some shiplap, something, man. We're joking, but what they did with the Giddy Prime thing was amazing. I think in the books, it was more kind of like a volcanic kind of, you know, bad guy lair, just kind of generic, you know. Whatever they did with those fireworks, like ink blot splatter
that was cool. things. That was cool.
So cool. I was thinking about those since I saw it. Just so many visual elements in here that I've never seen before, and something that I'm so familiar with, just had my mind, you know, racing for hours after I, you know, on the drive home and when I wasn't able to sleep afterward, just thinking about it.
I know this movie's been staying with me. It's been staying with me. The performance has been staying with me. The music's been staying with me. I fell asleep the other night to the Dune, like, part two score. Like, I think it was like the night we finished the movie. I didn't get back to the house till like 2 a.m. and I fell asleep. And a lot of times I'll fall asleep to like old podcast interviews or old Letterman interviews or put some music on. And I just put that Dune score on and I was in it and I was out.
Oh, yeah,
this
man.
Score, the sound, he got like, I mean, Hans put bagpipes on this bitch. He put like, you can go on YouTube and like listen to the live performances of some of this music, and it's amazing. He has the one woman that did the she does that, and it's just her, but they have like reverb effects on her voice to give it like the sound like there's 10 of her.
50,000 didgeridoos.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's insane.
Yeah, it's huge.
Hey, Dewey, what's this song even about? I need some more goats. Put some goats over here.
You would think it would be, you know, that like busy. No, man, it's just so like epic in scale. It's
and
so
even cool. the thumper things they use to get the worm.
Hell yeah.
The fucking sandworms. How awesome was that? Like, doom, doom, doom. Yeah. I mean, that shit was on point, man.
Yeah, if anybody's, you know, listening and hasn't seen this yet, please spring for the IMAX. Like I did not realize how how effective that sound stuff was until it was rumbling through me and dropping my own parts on there right next to there.
What was your before I ask who your MVP was, what was your favorite scene in this movie? Not Dune Part One, but just this Part Two, Part Two.
Oh man, when I see it again, I'll have a different one, but. I think where upon reflection, where I really bought in to Chalamet and Zendaya was when they were working together as like a rocket team or you know, a bazooka team, like just and
when they came really out the sand and on, yeah. underneath that weird spider AT-AT or whatever.
Yeah. Like honestly, it was like for me that moment was like holy shit. Like they're showing things here, and the relationship is evolving in a way that I remember. You know, like seeing them cohesing the book or reading about them cohesing, and I'm seeing it here, and I never saw that in the Lynch stuff. So you know, it flows through for me all of my different experiences with it. That was my like, oh shit moment. This is right. way better than I would have expected to be. But I just think the visuals from Getty Prime with the infrared, you know, and the ink blot explosions, I think that's probably what I'm going to remember the most, you know, until the next time I see it.
He shot it in infrared, folks. For all you listeners out there, he shot that Getty Prime Harkonnen gladiator scene all in infrared. Like, that's insane. And then another thing, I was listening to Josh Brolin on another podcast. He said he shot this on IMAX, for IMAX, transferred it to 35 millimeter film, then transferred it back to IMAX so that way when we watch it, it's not super clean and digital. It still had that grainy look on top of being made for an IMAX screen. So that's why some of the shots, especially in the desert, they don't look like a regular HD camera shot, even though to me, everything still looked pristine and amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Josh Brolin was breaking that down. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. That's amazing.
It is, man. I never got that kind of like uncanny valley. And you know? I think when you see a lot of CG elements and stuff, even some of the best of them, there's, you know, fuzz around the edges or whatever you kind of notice. I was just so immersed because of, you know, the craft that Villeneuve brought to it, man. Oh, God.
Those scenes will stay with me.
What about you, brother? What was your favorite?
My favorite scene would have to be, honestly, that ending is probably my favorite scene. Like the lead up to him, to Paul, telling that crazy witch bitch to back him off. And then she's like, she either said blasphemy. I think she said abomination. I think she's like abomination, you know? Plus that woman always plays a smug.
She does.
Bitch in every movie she's in, which just is a testament to her amazing acting, but she, you know, she needed to be put in check. And this is fight, that whole transition from when he said he was going to marry. Oh, this is really one of my favorite scenes because it has various reasons. The emotion is at stake, everything's at stake. Obviously the fate of the next emperor or the practically the universe as far as we know it, the Duneverse is at stake, and he beats I always forget his name. He beats Austin Butler with that sneaky
Fade.
He beats Fade. He kills him.
You fought well, Atreides.
Like he straight up did, I don't care what anybody says, he did a straight up Stellan Skarsgård impression.
I thought the same thing. We didn't talk about that.
Yeah. He was like, I'm just going to go a little lighter with it, obviously, but I'm going to, the way Skarsgård was playing the uncle.
The Baron.
It's just, I'm still doing my way of, you know, he was still doing his way of acting. He's just in a fat suit, but he's still Stellan Skarsgård. Absolutely. He could still be telling Thor where to find the Infinity Stones. You know what I'm saying? And he's still, but this time he's, you know, he's bald and he's, you know, he's wearing a fat suit and he's creepy as fuck. He's in those weird oil baths. And he just basically played Stellan Skarsgård, right? He did what he does best. He's just got that creepy, that undertone. He's just an amazing actor. And I love that Butler made that choice to be like, you know what? I'm just going to, because I'm related to him.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do an impression of his voice and it's going to be a little lighter. And I thought that was great. So when we were introduced to him, I was like, oh, damn, that's very interesting. But seeing him face off against Paul at the end in that fight, and then when Paul's like, and I will marry you, Empress, and Florence Pugh's getting a little excited at the idea, but also a little afraid. But then we pan over to Zendaya, and she's also like biting her lip in that like betrayed moment, but also like, I'm kind of intrigued. And then the pervert in me's like, well, don't worry. Look, everybody slow down. We can all get along.
There's okay, nothing more deep to go around here.
Just the three of us, you know? No, it's not that kind of movie. All right, I'll wait for the parody in about 1 hour. And but no, that was so much emotion. It was just raw. Like I was invested and I was like, damn. And I love when she goes off at the end and jumps on that sandworm by herself.
Yeah. You know? That's a huge departure. Like I said, you know, Chani was just like, all right, I see why you need to do this. You know, I'll be your concubine. Like Jessica was, you know, the Duke's concubine. We'll have our love. You'll have your marriage. And it just kind of all fell along those like feudalistic, you know, arranged marriage lines.
And he told her, he's like, I will always love you for as long as I breathe. And I was like, oof, damn, son. Damn. Yeah. Like, I feel like they just needed to drop, like, some... And he just, like, walks out, drops the microphone. This time it's a blade, but it doesn't shatter, you know. I realize I just gave you a long monologue on my favorite scene. It was really just that ending. The ending was just so amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, all of it was amazing, but...
It was, man. And you know, I think the pacing was better than the first one, but like you said, by design, right? It wasn't like, I don't think any lessons were learned. I think they set it up that way. And I rewatched the first one, part one, last week.
Yeah, me too.
And if you notice in that one, like, there's a lot of silence in the beginning, and it just kind of builds and grows and grows. And I think it was just a giant crescendo all the way through part two, and it just
I can't wait for this one to come out on digital, and I'll just watch them back to back, because it picked up right where the last one left off.
Yeah,
there's been some time. You get the idea. There's been some time, but not much.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty seamless. Yeah,
because they're carrying Homeboy's body in the beginning of part two, and he died at the end of part one. So it's like.
Right. And points for them for not even being like, don't drop Jamis. Like, they didn't even pander to the audience. You know, they're with us. They know what's happening. I always love that shit. You know?
That's good. Yeah. They didn't hold the hands. He lulled us in. I don't know how he does it. I really don't know how he does it. Cause he's made so many different movies. Like, somebody that could watch The Prisoners, which is a very intense, emotional, like, dark thriller.
Yeah.
And shit does not go well. And then you watch Arrival, and it's like, oh man, and like, I sobbed like a baby in that movie, you know what I mean? Especially if you've ever lost anybody, like a loved one.
Absolutely.
And then you give us Sicario, and it's just like,
yeah, that's such
I've never wanted a breadth. Dude.
You know, like we were talking a little bit about Scorsese, like, hey man, you know, why, you know, Michael Jordan shouldn't have played baseball either. You're gonna do fine if you do something else, but just stick to the hits.
Stick to the gangsters, man. Stick to the gangsters.
Villeneuve seems to, you know, he's just
he can do whatever he wants. And I didn't even touch on Blade Runner. Blade Runner 2029 was amazing.
Yeah, dude, that's another one that I've kind of turned around on. It was Villeneuve, I think, has shattered a lot of illusions for me. I thought with his face, Ryan Gosling was, you know, just kind of like a pretty boy. No, man, he was great in that.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
Yeah, and I finally got to see Barbie not long ago. It was awesome as Ken, you know.
So good.
But, you know, I started talking about that. But, yeah, I think Villeneuve, he pulls more out of his actors than anybody I know. And I think that's evidence of me not hating what Chalamet did to my Paul Muad'Dib. Oosel, base of the pillar. What did you do? No, he nailed it.
Right, he nailed it. He crushed it. I have this theory, and I don't know if my wife agrees with me or not. I was talking about it with her the other night. I was like, he does this Christian Bale thing when he's acting. It's not even the yelling. It's like the serious part. And I feel like my theory may be strengthened by the fact that he said that The Dark Knight was his reason for wanting to become an actor. And there's that scene where, you know, Bruce is sitting. We got to talk about Batman, kids. If you listen to the podcast, it always comes back to Batman. There's that scene where Christian Bale Bruce Wayne is sitting there in the bat suit, but the cowl's off, and Alfred's about to give him the note from Rachel. And he's like, I let that madman blow him straight to hell. Now, granted, he's trying to bury a Welsh accent, so sometimes it comes out, let that madman blow her straight to hell, you know, and it kind of comes out like that. Well, fucking Chalamet does that. In all the conversations he had with Zendaya, especially in the desert, it's very, oh, I know what I have to do. I know this is going to be the way it has to be. And it's this very, like, crisp but subtle. There's anger and emotion, like, in a very subtle, calm presence.
You know what I'm saying?
And it's like boiling. It's boiling, and it's about to get loose, but it doesn't.
Yeah. And then a little bit rumble all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when he did yell, it was very like, I was just waiting for him to be like, where are the others? Where's the trigger? Where is it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my own theory. But I think the MVP would still, my MVP for this movie would be Zendaya.
Yeah. She was so good, man. Yeah. I don't know. Man, if I watch it again and you ask me again, I'll have someone else.
Everybody
did such a great, Batista did a great job as, you know, which that's another one that was kind of like, you know, transformed for me. The Beast Raban was, the total badass. And he kind of ends up a failure. And this one, like, it showed him kind of a coward. Like, he was running from Paul whenever, you know, he would show up. You don't really see that in the other ones. They added so much depth to what were otherwise, like, not really on screen long. Like, how long do you think Austin Butler was on screen? It felt like he was on 25 minutes, but I bet it was less than 15. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, they kind of, like, they gave him that big scene in the Coliseum on the Giddy Prime. Yeah. And he was kind of popping in and out after that. And even with Brolin, Brolin shows up at the very end playing a really badass song that I wish we could get our hands on. And and then he shows up, does his thing. He has his moment. Everyone has their moment to shine. People did say online they were blown that they thought that Florence Pugh was she kind of got marginalized. But I don't, even without reading the book, I mean, she's narrating half the damn movie.
That was Irulan's role. Yeah, Irulan is writing the events of Dune. She's captioning the history.
Well, there
of
you go.
Happened. So she and has course, a yeah.
Chris, oh, of course, Chris Walken.
I know, we haven't seen anything about the goddamn Emperor yet, man. Which for anybody who's a fan of the that late 90s, early 20s music, he had that amazing dance routine. And what was the name of it? I know it was
a Fatboy yeah. Slim, right?
Yeah, it was Fatboy Slim song. I can't remember the name of it. It's
you're the one that told me it had a Dune reference that I didn't even.
Yeah, know. The lyrics are: "If you walk without a rhythm, you won't attract the worm," and that's talking about the sand walk they do.
The sand walk.
I wonder if that if Dylan
has he always been has he always been a Dune fan?
Maybe. He seems the type.
Or Villeneuve made a reference to it. I don't know. But it was great because, you and me and another buddy were watching, our buddy Scott, we were watching the movie, and all three of us laughed in unison every time Chris would get on there and say something. Because it takes you out of it, dude. But it took me just enough out of it so I could jump back in, and I didn't mind it. It didn't taint anything for me.
No, it was part of the ride, man. For me, right. I was just I was enjoying everything. That didn't take me out of anything at all. I was having fun, just like the whole thing. What was it? They're coming out of orbit or something like that.
Like, just mass ships coming out of orbit now. And it's like, okay, all right. And we're all three of us are just chuckling, and then it gets back to the serious tone.
So good, man.
So good. So good. do you want to rate this thing, or did you have anything else? Did you have any alibis or burning desires?
No, we can rate it. I did have it around here. I don't know if you wanted to. The Dune book has a 40-page glossary, and I didn't know if you're interested in anything like this, but I thought I might throw a couple of words at you, see if you can guess them. Some of them may have dropped.
Oh, this is delightful. This is delightful.
You want to do something like that?
Let me try this. I'll cue up some game show music. Now, we're doing wrong answers only, right?
That's right.
Okay, all right.
All right. Oh, shit. Oh, I lost it. I closed it out of my browser, but I can go from memory. All right. How about, what is a Gom Jabbar?
Gom Jabbar. This is usually when you have two women at the same time enter your quarters. One feeds you pickled eggs, and the other one just cuts your toenails. That's not what that is.
That's what it should be. No, unfortunately, the Gom Jabbar was the name of the needle that the Reverend.
Oh, right, the poison needle. Right.
Yeah. So they did say that one. How about what is a siege?
Oh, the siege. The siege is the hideout, the little hideout in the sand.
Hell yeah.
The Fremen were hanging out there. That's my siege. Yeah.
Nailed it, man. Yeah.
Mi casa, tu casa. Me siege, your siege.
Hell yeah. You nailed it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. All right. I think that's all I have, man. I lost my list, but that's pretty good. Yeah, 50%. That's not bad. I got just a little bit of weird trivia. The shields that they wear, we didn't really talk about that.
Let's talk about that.
I think that's such a great trope, I never really saw anywhere other than Dune. So there's lasers, there's shields, there's atom bombs, all this shit that is kind of antiquated, but you never see them in the same place. Mm-hmm. So the shields, then this is I think a credit to the way Herbert laid everything out. Nobody wears shields outside because they attract the sandworms,
right.
So they come right away. But also, you'll never see someone wearing a shield with a lasgun because if the lasgun hits a shield, it causes an atomic reaction.
That would be something that would have been nice for them to explain with one line of dialogue.
So, yeah, some kind of exposition.
I didn't bump into it, but at the same time, I know what you mean. Some people probably would bump into it.
Yeah, you see it in I'm trying to think of the one thing. They were using a laser when they were coming after Duncan Idaho in the first one to cut through the door. When he put a shield on, they stopped. Because they even they know they would just obliterate themselves. Just a weird little cool thing that I think.
That fight scene in that first one is so good too. When he goes out there and he knows he's going and he just takes out. He took out 20 fucking dudes.
Yeah, it is.
It's awesome. So good.
And that's that's actually the one of the best characters in Dune, Duncan Idaho. They didn't bring him back That's a he comes back in almost every book as a later kind of cloned version of himself.
No way, really?
Yeah, Duncan Idaho is one of the best characters.
So we could very well see Jason Momoa again.
We probably will if they keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't surprise. Okay. All right. Yeah. That's interesting. See, that's why you have specialists on the show sometimes, kids, because otherwise it's just me waxing rhapsodically about robots, tits, and lasers. And we did get some lasers in this movie.
And that's why you just indulge in a random book from the 60s when you're, you know, 6 or 7 years old, because one day you might get the guest host on the Comic-Con's podcast. My dreams have come true, man. Thank you.
It was so funny because my regular co-host on this show, we were talking about our reading and the last book we read and how most of our books end up becoming paperweights. And he was like, you know what the last book I read was? Mortal Kombat. Okay. Nice. The movie Hell adaptation.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. I love it.
So it was like the book adaptation of the 1995 Mortal Kombat movie. That's the last book you read.
That's awesome.
And that's why we're cultured. But the Comic-Consies wrote in. I asked the Comic-Consies what they thought of the movie. At Turok 89, it stinks. No, just kidding. It fucking owned. I'm going to butcher this. Panino Ranoman, speechless in negative form. Make it shorter next time, maybe 35 minutes version. Oh, Jesus. Well, I guess, I don't know.
We got a Vine fan out here.
Right, yeah. We got a Vine fan, yeah.
Short form stuff.
Helen Helsinki's amazing, saw it in IMAX and it was and I was melting. Yeah, I agree. We were literally melting because it was so hot in our in our theater. AFib MC, it was incredible. Hats off to Denny once again. Boofer 81, I've been walking around with an awkward large boner since I saw it. Likewise, my friend. Likewise. And Pat Ryan. Boners. Exactly. Sandy Boners. Pat Ryan 2098, money. That's all he said. Money.
Right.
And I couldn't agree more. I hope it makes a lot of money because I want them to make more of this.
Oh, absolutely, you know? Man. Yeah. Or just take a stab at, you know, just some fun stories, you know, just weird shit like this. People want to see this stuff.
Could you envision this being like, if they don't do another movie, could you envision this being like a, because Warner Brothers has the rights, maybe like an HBO miniseries where they do, because they could probably do that, right? They could probably.
They could, like, man, but. It just gets weirder. It gets so much weirder. And I hope that's an incentive for them to do it. Like, hopefully they'll try, but it's hard. It's hard to imagine them. I guess if I was in on the ground floor of this before I knew that they were going to make a movie out of it, I'd have thought the same thing the first few, but it's much more difficult to continue telling this story. So I'm intrigued to see where they end it. Agreed. I would guess like maybe book two or three, they can do beyond there. I'd be shocked. It'd be interesting if they do. Absolutely. HBO could and should do it.
Right. Okay. I like it.
Just at least the second or third book. I'd love to see 4, 5, or 6, but do they have the balls? That's the question.
Right. Right. Well, we do have 6 beautiful ratings on this show when we rate these shows. We try to stay on the flavor positivity, you know, because anybody can be negative, especially nowadays, you know, so we try to give ourselves some range and positivity. So at the top of the heap, we have Call It A Work good, Movie Theater good, Home Video good, Catch It On Cable good, Sick With The Flu good, and Solitary Confinement good. So, Evan, my friend, where do you stand with this?
I mean, I suppose there can be a movie better than it. So I would say, halfway between Call Out of Sick and Movie Theater Good. Mm-hmm. I want to put it all the way at Call Out of Sick Good, but I guess you got to reserve that top spot, right? Just in case someday. But this is the best movie I've seen in theaters that I can remember. I did see a lot of movies in a brownout drunk, but this is one that I happen to remember well and love it. So maybe there was another one out there that I barely remember, but this was amazing, man.
It is a blessing, isn't it, to have to remember the movies now? You know what I'm saying?
It really is.
I'm with you, brother. I'm with you. And I have to say, this is definitely Call It A Work good for me. I didn't call it a work to see this. I definitely saw this late with you at, like, I think our movie didn't even start till like 10:30 after those trailers. Yeah. But and it's long, and it didn't feel long. It did get to a point where I was like starting to feel the length just because of how late it was at night. But the movie itself didn't feel like it was like dragging by any stretch. It wasn't like Return of the King where I'm like, Frodo, Jesus Christ. You know what I mean? Like,
how many fucking endings? My God.
Come on. No, I think it's, and I even said on social media, I think it's one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. I think my whole life. Like, because it just had, I was just so wrought with the emotion, the music, and the performances. Yeah. Like,
it was incredible, man. I'm grateful to have been able to see it with you. It's a memory.
Yeah, likewise, man. And I'm just grateful for seeing it with you on A, getting to know you after moving to this town and getting to meet new people and then getting to see this movie with you and you kind of giving me the extra little backstories on this stuff too. It's pretty fascinating, you know.
I'm glad you dug it, man. I hope I didn't go too far into the weeds.
No, it's awesome. No, it's awesome. Yeah. I love it. I love this kind of shit, you know. It's and that's you know, anytime you can take some time off from the regular life and reality and kind of go follow some spiritual sci-fi, you know, that's a blessing in itself. So I'll take
Hell yeah, brother.
Call Out of Work Good, or somewhere between Call Out of Work Good and Movie Theater Good. See, if you haven't seen it, I mean, we pretty much spoiled a lot of it for you, but we didn't get too nitty gritty. We didn't go scene for scene.
There's plenty left. Yeah.
There's plenty. And also, most people probably like watch the original or heard of the books by now. Most people that would listen to this podcast anyway, I would imagine. I would hope so.
If you haven't, you know,
if you haven't,
highly recommend it.
No time like the present. Well, look, kids, if there's anything we said on this show that made you question your morality or your mortality, okay, or even, I don't know, the spice in life, eh? Eh?
I see what you did.
Just remember, at the end of the day, it's just fiction. Don't take it seriously, okay? Please, for the love of God, don't take it seriously. And don't be afraid, okay? Because fear is the mind killer. Right?
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about, man.
Thanks for doing this, brother. Yeah.